Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Today's video is brought to you by Predictable Revenue's service LinkedIn Outbound. Find out how we can leverage and grow your existing LinkedIn network to book meetings into your calendar at the link below. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Joseph Trodden. Welcome to the show. We're going to be talking about the Goldilocks rule for making your first sales hire. We've got a couple things that if you don't do these correctly when you're transitioning from founder-led sales to building your first team, it can all go tits up. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Hi, Colin. Thanks very much for having me on.
Happy to have you on. I know you've got a wide background when it comes to sort of sales and the different, you know, levels and ways that you've been involved. I'm curious, talk to me about how you got to sort of where you are today.
Cool. So I work with growth entrepreneurs. They are typically making that transition we're talking about from being very founder-centric, founder right at the epicenter, up to their next level. So they're typically at that point, they've got a team of around 5 to 15. There is ambitions for growth there. They've got the big vision. And it's just about them going up to that next level. So I've worked in the entrepreneurial space for coming on six and a half years. I was coaching before that. I've worked with over 300 entrepreneurs. I've seen them at all different stages. And the area that I focus on is where I feel that I add the most value. What's really exciting to them about me is is that they're doing stuff. Like they're at a point where they're beyond startup. They know what their offer is. They know what they're going to try and get, but they're still at a size where they've got this agility to keep doing really cool things. So that's really my journey has led me specifically to that niche.
And it's an interesting niche, and I kind of sit in that niche as well, in that in some ways with similar experience, in that I've got the founder experience, I've got the sales experience, and looking at, you know, I get a lot of people that come to me and say, you know, I'm a, you know, first time CEO or second time CEO, but I don't have that sales background. So, you know, they know that I come from a sales background. And so I get this question a lot, and including myself, nobody seems to get this right the first time, sometimes the second time or third time. For me, it took 2-3 kicks at the can to get it right in that sort of transition from, you know, being the only salesperson at the company to building a bit of an organization to support you there. So why do you think nobody gets it right the first time?
That's heartbreaking news for the listeners, right? Nobody's going to get this right the first time. Some of the challenges that I see when my entrepreneurs are making that type of transition is they don't actually know what they want in terms of a salesperson coming in. You know, they haven't really broken down that sales process to go, what are the things that I am looking for somebody to do? You know, is it just about that lead generation? Is it just getting that first touch point? Is it somebody who's going to work with a particular client group? Is it somebody who's going to work on partnerships? You know, when you break down the things, it should be, what's the thing that is really going to add the value in there? Is it somebody actually with more experience than me in a particular area? Is it, like I say, just somebody, with respect, you know, somebody who's going to do a bit of the grunt work and pick up the stuff at the bottom? So one of the fundamental mistakes is that often when the entrepreneur is looking at sales, they're just looking at that whole piece and they haven't actually broken it down to go, where are my key strengths? What are the markets that I'm going to go after? Where is this person really going to operate? And that's one of the challenges that happens when they make that hire. Another thing that they do is they'll bring somebody in and not give them the right remit. So if you're looking at sales, you can take sales right from, okay, we want to hit $1 million in sales. Here's a blank bit of paper, right down to, we want to hit $1 million in sales with these specific clients targeted in this way with this message. The sales process works like this and you follow it to the letter. You know, that is something that's almost not quite, I don't know if taken for granted is the right thing, but it's not, they've not thought about what are the parameters that I want that salesperson to operate in. Am I giving them that free will? Because if they're experienced, they're going to bring in things that maybe you haven't thought of as a sales founder. And then you're looking at that going, oh, that's not how we do it around here. So, but that agreement hasn't been made. So you end up with this back and forth, and you constrict them, and sometimes that'll frustrate them, or they'll think, you know, this isn't going to be the right place for me because I don't like being told what to do. So ultimately it's about really breaking down that sales process into its components and thinking, who is that person that is, what I really want them to come in and do? And what are those, what's the degrees of latitude that I'm going to give them?
Yeah, I really like the sort of planning element. It's the common question that I get from CEOs. It's probably the most common question is, do I hire an account exec? Do I hire a sales manager? Do I hire a VP of sales, CRO? Like what level is it that I should hire at to begin with? Mm-hmm.
There's a mistake with that level of hire. When I talk about the senior, like you need to be really sure if that's what you're wanting to bring in, and that you will, your ego will allow that, you know, somebody who's got more experience. A mistake I have seen is people hire too high up the food chain and that person doesn't want to pick up the phone. You know, they're used to being the sales strategist person who's directing others. So they think, oh, I'll get this, you know, this senior person, that'll take care of everything. But they forget that person hasn't picked up the phone in 15 years and they don't want to do that. Or they could take somebody who's on a bit of a wind down at the end, who wants to dabble with an entrepreneurial company and get involved in the sales strategy, but not actually do the work. So that, you know, the motivation is a key thing to get there right as well.
Yeah. And just because I'm Canadian, I've got to work in a hockey analogy. Because it's just
cool. Of course.
Right. Like I like to think about it as you're building if you're building a hockey organization, right? Do you want a player, right? And like that's somebody on the front lines who's actually out on the ice skating and shooting, and they've got those skills of, you know, prospecting, you know, cold calling, closing, those types of things. And that player probably could design plays and probably could, you know, find other good players. But what job are we asking that player to do? Is we're asking you to be on the ice. We're asking you to score goals and block shots and, you know, do all the things on the ice. And so it's like, do you want a player, right? Do you want a coach? Do you want somebody who's going to sit on the bench and coach players? And sure, that coach could play hockey, but that's not what he's trained to do, right? And sure, you want to hire somebody for what they're good at, not what they could do. And sometimes when people want to work for a fun company, they'll do things that they, air quotes, could do, but it's not their like sweet spot. Mm-hmm. And then if you go up another level, like, should I hire a VP of sales? Should I, if you were to hire like the GM of a hockey team or a sports team, right? Like they might be a good player coach, but they might not be, right? Like their core set of skills are going to be very different. And if you tell that GM to go get on the ice, it's probably been a fucking long time since they've skated, or at least trained at a high level. So while they do know how to skate and how to play hockey, they're more of a beer leagues kind of guy than a professional light player, right? And what we're looking for, it seems like what you're saying is you're looking for a professional in either of those roles, and you need to decide what level you want to hire at.
Sure, 100%.
So how do we get it right? How do we figure out this selection of like, who do we hire? Why we hire them? Like what, how, when?
Yeah, you're the guy, you know this, right? So what I would suggest and what works well is that, remember, salespeople are salespeople, right? So when you're doing your interview, they're going to do a pretty good job of selling it to you. And let's talk about one of the challenges there, that if you're hiring somebody above your own pay grade or your own skill grade rather, you probably don't know what that looks like, so they can sell you anything. We had a chat before about advisors and mentors, and entrepreneurs just don't seem to use them particularly well. I don't know if it's a humility thing or, you know, they want to do it their way, but you really have to understand what that role is. You know, what is that? If I'm taking somebody senior in, what is a fair expectation? Who else is doing that? What's that story been like for them? If you're hiring somebody that you do understand the position, but a key thing for me is to hire slow. You know, if you're going to get the right person, don't just jump the first one. And make sure that they, of course, make sure that they understand the company. You know, that's standard fare. But what would they actually do? Like, tell me what your first 30, 60, 90 days would be in this company. How would you approach it? What are the things that you would be doing on a day-to-day basis? What do you think is a fair target? You know, give them that information. Don't do an interview where it's, you know, coming at 12 o'clock and we'll talk for half an hour and I'll make a decision. I mean, if you're going to get the right person, it's not the way to do it. The right person should want to give you that information. Like, this is what I want to do. Okay, if you're hiring extremely junior, you know, maybe they're not going to get that. But I don't, you know, if you're going to do that, then okay, if that is what you need. But it's so important that the expectations are clear on both sides. So getting them to map out that 90 days, you know, what would that look like for you? That's a great discussion point. I had somebody...
I just wanted to double down on that because you made a comment about, you know, if they're junior, they're not going to have this. And I see this mistake a lot with early sales teams is people, they want to give somebody a chance who hasn't been in this role. And like, I see, you know, I'm the underdog, so I'm going to hire another underdog. Right. But this is your entrepreneurial journey. And like by hiring somebody that doesn't have sales experience, you're putting that position at risk. And sales is potentially is the gas that makes your car go. And so like a huge red flag is hiring somebody with zero sales experience, right? You need to be hiring and surrounding yourself with people that are better than you. And if this person is sort of your equal, like they're not going to, you're going to spend more time coaching and training and working on them than you are actually like getting value out of that hire.
I mean, that's true right across the organization. And again, this is an absolutely typical thing that happens when people are building out their teams, that when you're in the early stages, it's just like, let's fill the gap, let's fill the gap, let's get somebody in. They're just really an extension of the entrepreneur to save them time. You know, not to actually bring in a skill set. It's just like, you can now do that thing and it means it frees me up a little bit. But it's not, sometimes you need to think, do I want two £20,000 people or do I want one £40,000 person? And that, again, that's just not a question that gets asked very often. Or do I want a £40,000 person in for 2 days a week? You know, like what does this actually need? Rather than just like, yeah, let's get the next grad in or something like that. I don't know if you've got like apprenticeship schemes where you are, but again, you know, they'll hire in the apprentice, but the problem you've got is they don't know what they're doing. Like they can have a good work ethic, but you need to factor in the amount of time that it's going to take to train that person. Of course, what can be good there is you can train them in your way of doing things, but you've got to factor that in.
100%, and factoring in your capabilities, like can you hire and train somebody? For example, when I was making the transition, like I hung on to sales at Predictable Revenue here until we were $1 million in ARR. And I admit that was probably too long for me. I probably could have handed it off halfway through that transition. And the next hire I made was somebody who was super senior. And like I've been in sales for 10 years before starting the company. And I felt like I probably could train somebody, but I still found it was the right thing to do to hire in somebody who was more experienced with me so that I didn't have to worry about that. And I think the thing that like you forget is that it's so easy to forget is that you're literally building an organization, right? And you're building everybody that's reliant on you, then you're not really building an organization. You're building yourself into the super rep, right? You don't want to be a super rep. You want to be standing like, you want to be building a pyramid where like, if you walk away, the pyramid's still standing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think that's a really good point to make there around you're building an organization. And that you should start filling those seats with the right people at the right time. I mean, obviously, you know, however, it depends on the stage you're at, your journey, about how far in advance you're actually going to plan. I mean, I would always recommend like hire for now. Sometimes people make the mistake of, you know, oh yeah, I'll get them in now because they'll be great in 6 months time. They won't. Like just hire for what you need now. But it is about baking in some longevity. Did you get your senior hire right?
There we go. Yeah. No, I didn't get it right at all. The first time we hired a super senior rep, and she was amazing at closing. And then when we looked to kind of push to management, not something that was like a strength. When we, and like what they wanted to do, when we went with our next hire, We went with, I think the thing that I screwed up was I was looking for somebody at more of a director level. I wanted somebody to take the strategy away from me so I didn't have to think about it and worry about it. Yep. Strategy, I wanted them to own the strategy and the team and like improving how we sell. And then we ended up hiring somebody who is an exceptionally good manager. And so there was this, like, they were very good at their job at being a manager, but mm-hmm. I had not laid out the correct expectations for them. Mm-hmm. Or like, I had these expectations that they're going to be a director and they were only operating at a manager level. And they're thinking, hey, I'm doing a great job. And I'm thinking, fuck, you're doing a terrible job. And this was 100% my fault. Like, this is a very, mm-hmm. this is a good person who landed in another great job at another great startup and is doing great things. And so I look back and I'm like, whose fault was this? 100% my fault. Third time I hired somebody to take things on and they were super smart, talented person on the marketing side, great manager. And I thought, hey, maybe they can learn sales through this process. And the, I ended up hanging on to all the sales, like the sales side of things. And then the last time I said, okay, here's what I want. I'm very clear about like, these are the criteria I'm looking for. We went and hired somebody. We've got somebody great and they've been on, I think coming up on a year now and they're building the team. And I, not that I don't think about sales, but I don't worry about it anymore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you go about like setting the expectations higher at the right level. And it can sound, don't know, maybe it sounds like, yeah, I've got it. But when you actually map that out and think about like, who is that person? If, you know, if you create that list, what is the sales function? What's the sales function now? And, you know, it's worth having a look at what's the, what do we see a bit down the line as well. But what is that sales function now? What would it mean to this organization to put a real A player in to take 1, 2, and 3 away from me? You know, who is that person? And do I actually just need a few sessions with a strategy mentor so I can map out like just sense check? This is what I'm actually trying to do. Does this make sense? And like pay for somebody to do that. So like pay somebody so you can actually have that conversation with, not like some snatched coffee somewhere, you know, that's not a snatched coffee conversation. But yeah, to really start thinking about this in the organizational terms that you talked about before, list all those things out and be thinking, what level is that person? Where's the A player? Where's the person who's going to come in the door? What's the consequences of putting those people in?
I'm curious, how do you someone decide what level to hire at? Like if they want somebody who's tactical on the ice, a manager, or more strategic, like what's the, I know what was sort of right for me and it was sort of based on my skills, but I'm curious if somebody's outside of the sales like if they don't have, like I understand I was a bit of an unusual founder coming from sales. I had no product mm-hmm. or engineering experience. And so probably in some ways the opposite. If at least the population of founders that I know, I was like the one sales pariah. Seems to be more and more common now. I was like the one guy cold calling in the accelerator and people were like, what the yeah. hell are you doing? Why are you always talking to yeah. people? I'm like, why aren't you talking to customers? Yeah. So if you don't have a sales background, how do you decide like what level or like who to hire first, who to hire next?
What do you hate the most? You know, when you've got that list off there, what's the thing that you're like, oh man, I just hate doing that. It's important to note that as a founder, you can't get away from the fact, like there's no great founder I know that is a pure product person, you know, like I'm not saying they don't exist, but it is a rare breed because when they focus on the particular customer segment that is suited to the nature of the conversation they can have, to take that out of the abstract. So you've got a travel company that I work with. Like that founder is great at talking to people at the partnership level. You know, it's a waste of, could he do cold calls? Yes, he's probably not the best at doing that type of thing. And, you know, touching base with the one-to-one customers, but amazing at creating the partnerships. So if you're looking at your sales list, you know, what are all the functions of this organization? Well, where am I excellent? And where is it just draining my time? So it all comes back down to what does that function actually look like? But you'll know in your heart when you look at that list. But equally, I've got founders who you shouldn't be doing the partnership stuff because they're great at like quick relationships, but they're terrible at maintaining them. You know, they know everybody a bit. So you don't really want that person doing the partnership thing because they're not going to check in and ask how the kids are doing or remember somebody's birthday or, you know. So you'll know from that which ones you want to take off your list.
Gotcha. So to sum, it's figure out what you want to do, figure out what you don't want to do. And like, what is the stuff that you want to do and you're well equipped to do and focus on that. And then look at the stuff where that you don't want to do and are not and or are not equipped to do, and then hire somebody to do those pieces.
100%. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the I need to find a better term than grunt, like the entry level person. It doesn't necessarily mean that that is the next person that you need. I mean, this can be another common mistake as well, that I'll get the junior person because it'll take the lower level stuff off. But actually, in a lot of cases, that isn't defined well enough yet. You know, that maybe that needs a bit more time to go, what actually is that process? You know, what does that part of the funnel really look like when I get somebody in? Because if you get somebody, and again, it's because as a founder, you can take things for granted. Like, you're so used to it that you make all these little fixes on the fly at the start of your funnel. You know exactly what words to look out for. You know when to drop this into the conversation. But you put somebody in cold and they don't know that. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, the get the entry level person to take that low stuff off. Until that's a process and you can define it and you can hand it over to somebody really clear, you know, just think about what it is that you want to take out of that organizational chart.
If we think about, so let's say we start with somebody at a tactical level, right? We bring in that frontline salesperson. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna pull that back. What are your thoughts on the player coach idea of, you know, I don't know if I should hire somebody tactical or if I should hire a manager. So I'll hire an experienced rep that wants to be a sales manager and I'll let them grow into that role.
I've seen it work. You know, I don't think it's not a terrible idea because again, this depends on the size of the organization, right? Because the size that I work with, typically that is what's going to happen, or they're promoting somebody and giving them the shot. Be wary of that, actually. Be wary of like promoting one of the sales team up to manager level, and because the view that you get of them might not necessarily be the whole truth. You know, like the view sometimes affected when the founder's kicking about and everything's running hot and they're really supportive. You don't know that's always 24/7 the attitude that's going on. However, when you're looking at a small team like the ones that I work with, they want somebody who can do it as well. You know, somebody who's just kind of standing there saying, this is how you do it and I'll coach you and so on. If they don't believe that you could just pick up the phone and do it, it doesn't really work. So it depends. For me, it depends on the size of the business and the nature and the culture of that. It's definitely possible. But as you grow, you don't want that person on the phone because actually they add more value listening to other people's calls and up, you know, raising up their skills. So again, it would depend. For my size, I think it's a good shout for the reasons I outlined there.
Interesting. Yeah, I can see. I see a lot of startups getting in, like making this call, and my, I shouldn't say a lot. I don't think I work with nearly as many entrepreneurs as you. I've kind of worked with a handful of people that are local, or I meet at conferences, and they tend to reach out, you know, here and there. I am open to the idea that, so I totally agree that the manager needs to be able to jump on and make those calls and jump in and close, and needs to be a strong rep because that's how that's why your team is going to respect you, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't know how to cold call, how can you coach somebody on cold calling? If you don't know how to close, how can you teach somebody how to close? And I think, you know, salespeople are very sensitive to that, right?
Sure.
The thing that I would say to watch out for is the journey from account executive. Like, everybody thinks it goes like SDR, account executive, manager, and like sales manager, VP, director, whatever that is. It's a different job. It is not a direct promotion. It is almost the same as going from engineer to product manager, or to go from Apple to Orange. It is not going from I'm a little apple and I'm going to be a bigger apple, right? It is a full. This is a very strange analogy. We're getting into the food now.
Yeah, Yeah, but we're saying, like, if it's you're a salesperson, a senior salesperson, you're basically doing the same job, but you're better at it. Whereas being the coach is very different to being the salesperson. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Totally yeah. different set of skills. And people that are great at one job are not necessarily going to be great at the other job.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that as well. It is about, you know, the right person to do it. Like I say, knowing that they can do it, I think, is important. Especially if they're coming in from the outside. What I'd also say actually on that front is if you're going to promote somebody from the inside, like say we're going to try it. You know, I want to see what this looks like for a couple of months. Now, if you don't take them, you might lose them, right? But at least you've been fair on the expectations there. Because you need to, that can twist the dynamic a bit as well, where you've had people that were peers and then somebody's up. It depends whether that goes to their head or not. Or another challenge you have around that is that a player coach might be coaching people to do it their way. You know, this is exactly how I do it. And it doesn't leave them scope. Now, it depends on the nature of your sales calls, but there's a few entrepreneurs I work with that it's like relationships with the customers. And you can't do that by going, right, this is how I build a relationship and that's what you're going to do. So, yeah, they do need to be mindful. I think the key thing to take away there for anybody that's listening is your point around that is not a direct promotion. Like, that's not the same job. You definitely can get the person that can do it, but, you know, be mindful of that distinction.
Totally. And one last thing I'll just say on behalf of my fellow salespeople that are, you know, applying to work at startups, don't tease me. Right. Don't tell me eventually I'll be a sales manager, or don't tell me it's a sales manager position and then ask me to be the AE. Right? Like if you need a closer, say you need a closer. If you need somebody to prospect, say you need a prospector. If you need somebody who's full stack to do both, say that. Don't hire me as a manager and then ask me to do those things. Right. I see that. I don't know. Do you see that fairly often?
What I see is the, because we're at this growing business, there's this sort of thing about, oh yeah, we're growing quickly and we want people to grow with us and so on. Yeah, but you know, what does that actually mean? Like, does that mean in 12 months we're going to, like, show me be open about it, you know, show the forecast, show this is what we're trying to do, this is where we've come from. But yeah, definitely be honest. It can be, they can sometimes get caught up in their own hype around, like, you know, we're going to all these places. And obviously the media love that story of, you know, the founder and this overnight success and, you know, somebody at 23 is now VP of blah, blah. Oh, I mean, it's just that's not a reliable bet. I would just be completely open and honest and transparent, because then you'll be able to sleep at night as the entrepreneurial leader. You know, if you got somebody in and said, oh yeah, you'll be, you know, sales manager and you'll have your own team within, you know, 6 months and all this stuff, nobody's going to win from that. You know, nobody's going to win. You'll get a demotivated employee. Then it starts to get around your company that, oh yeah, I was promised this and it didn't happen. What did he say to you? So yeah, be very mindful of that. This is all about just being open and transparent, right? That's what everybody wants.
Totally. And like you said earlier, hire for what you need right now, not what you're going to need in 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think on that, like in that vein, if you're hiring for right now, how, like, say you've made that hire, how do you figure out what you need next?
Well, I mean, at the risk of repeating myself and going back to the list, I think that in addition to that, you want to be listening to the people that were in, you know, that hire that's come in. Like, there's another challenge as well. This is across all areas of the business. Like, when the founder's bringing those people in, now they've got a perspective that generally wasn't what the founder had. So then you've got to ask, well, what do you think we should be bringing in next? Why? Like, why would that help us? What would that enable us to do? How would it help you to develop? How would it free up your time? You know, what's the impact across the business? And starting to actually involve them in those types of decisions. This is this transition away from being the omnipotent God at the center who's got, you know, the universal story of everything. You know, if you're bringing these people in and you're giving them ownership, then those are the kind of mechanisms that you need to start involve. Like, involve them in that discussion. Say, who do you think we need?
Yeah, it can be, from my experience, it's so hard letting go of the reins. And what we're saying is, like, first you need to, you know, you got to let go of the tactical, then you need to let go of the managerial, and eventually you need to let go of the strategic side of things. How do I, if I'm somebody who's either in a, like a sales management or CEO role, or, you know, whatever, I guess, whatever my job title, wherever I come sit in the organization, if you're CEO managing salespeople, you are a sales manager, right? Mm-hmm. And sure. At some point you're going to need to let go of being a sales manager and move up to being like a sales, like the sort of executive strategic level. And then eventually you're going to need to let go of that. And so how do I manage my psyche, or how do I do this effectively so that I'm not just hanging on too long, like I did when hanging on to sales for up to a million, and arguably hanging on to managing the team for too long.
So I think what's quite good is setting those expectations out from the front. The I can't remember if I mentioned this to you when we talked before, but the alliance agreement from Reid Hoffman, you know, when they were competing for talent in Silicon Valley, Reid Hoffman was founder of LinkedIn, competing for talent, and money wasn't the thing. You know, money it wasn't enough of a differentiator. And if you only got people in for money, they would leave for more money. And they quickly realized it didn't matter who had the best ping pong table or smoothie maker or whatever. You know, we grow our own blueberries here. Like, what they wanted was people who had their own ambitions. So the alliance agreement is basically saying, you know, what do you want for your career, for your life? What does this business need? And where's the alignment between the two of those? And then to set that, I say normally that's 3 to 6 months for the stage of business that I'm at, but to then set those expectations out so that you know what you're going to devolve and how that role is expected to develop over time, and the promise and the commitment that you've made to them. Like, the challenge is when you're recreating that agreement every 10 minutes about, you know, do this, don't do that, no, I want back control of this, and letting people make the mistakes, man. You know, giving them the parameter to go, okay, if you want to own that sales function, you know, you want to develop that partnership relationships, for example. Okay, well, you've got a month, and then let them do it. You know, let them make some of the mistakes. Let them do things their way. Too often it's jumping in and going, you know, no, you need to go back to doing it my way, but it's not how they operate. And this is a key thing about leadership. You know, if you're, I asked this to one of my other entrepreneurs the other day about, like, you said, you know, I do empower the team. I'm really good at that. And I asked them, so what were the last three decisions that the team wanted to do that you disagreed with, but you let them do it anyway? And they didn't have them. You know, so that's not empowering the team. That's still, you are calling all of the shots. So it's those little things that you can put in advance. You know, thinking about those alliance agreements, I'm going to make a commitment to you about your development, but you have to commit to me about what you're going to give to the organization. And we create that win-win. And I think that's a great question about what was the last thing I let somebody do that I disagreed with, and not so you could shoot them later on. Like, you let them do it because if they get it wrong, they'll learn. You know, I believe in the person.
Totally. Yeah, it's such an interesting perspective. Like, the alliance, I think, was it Patty McLeod wrote about the experience at LinkedIn, or sorry, at Netflix, and they have sort of similar, they think about it as like a tour of duty. It's like, you are going to be here, you're going to be great at this, and at some point, the job or the role is going to evolve, and you're not going to be great at it anymore, and we're going to find somebody else. And they're very explicit about their tours
of duty. Or you're going to evolve, and we won't have the role for you, do you know?
Exactly, yeah, true. Yeah, and so
what about you then, Colin? How did you manage to, have you managed to let go?
Yeah, I mean, it took getting over the, I think I was afraid of letting go. I had a high bar, a high standard. And I think, you know, some advice that I got early days was, if somebody can do something that you're doing 60% as good as you are, then you should let go. And train them on how to do that, because it's going to level up your time. And you're probably also pretty bad at estimating, you know, what percentage good or bad they are. So, like, if it's 60%, it's kind of good enough. And they're probably better than you think they are. And so I really struggled with that first, to let go. And that probably held us back because I wasn't focusing on the strategic side. I wasn't focusing on building the business or training or coaching or product or engineering or any of these other things that I should have been, could have been focusing on. And then I think, so it came down to like willingness to let go that first time. And then the second time, I think I was willing to let go, but I didn't quite know, I hadn't really documented in detail really what did I want, what I was looking for out of that next hire. And like I said, we hired somebody who was a great manager, but I was expecting a GM. Yep. And like and it's unfair to that individual. We gave them lots of severance when we said, hey, this isn't a fit, because it wasn't their fault. It was our fault. Like we hired somebody with a different skill set, and that was on us. And when we finally did get that connection, it's been great. I've been through it about a year, and they make calls that I disagree with from time to time. And the person's been, they've been taking on more and more responsibility. So I'm able to focus my time and energy on the product side of things, the finance side of things, the, strategic side of things, building the company.
So look, and it is hard, right? I mean, it's hard to let those things go. So even if it is just, I'm going to let this aspect of it go. Like, I give that example of like partnerships, that's maybe a big one, but, I want you to run this part of the team, try and coach this person, see what happens for a day. Like, just give them part of it at a time rather than just going, okay, now that's all on you. And now I've got sleepless nights because there's 10 things there and I don't like the way you're doing 9 of them, Just pick one or two. And then if they're wobbling, then, but just... I go back to that, like, let people make some mistakes. I think it's quite easy at times for entrepreneurs to forget the mistakes that they made and how important they were in their developmental journey. And that is going to happen in fast-growing startups, man. Like, the old Facebook move fast and break things. Like, I know they had to change that. They had to change that when people kept taking the servers down. But it's a bit like that. People are still finding their feet. You're going to learn from these experiences. So, yeah, just be cognizant of what's actually going on and that you will never, ever get to the full potential of a business by holding the reins everywhere. You need to do that at the start because you're the only point of cohesion. At the start, you're the only one who's got the narrative. And people might be a little bit transient at that point and there's still way too much going on for things to be properly like processed and documented. It's a waste of time. But then there comes that inflection point when I'm dealing with clients that let's get this stuff down. Let's start empowering some people. Let's set a culture that actually sticks and has meaning because that's what's going to drive the behaviors. And let's take it from there.
So well said, Joe. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights. Thank you so much for being on the show. Want to get you to my favorite segment, the cold call. And so I understand this has been probably the part you're looking forward to the most because you don't cold call very often. But set the conversation for me. So who typically, who is your target customer or buyer? Like, and what are they, what's the typical job role and what kind of company are they working for?
So if you look at it, we would, I have to say, I can't actually remember the last time I did a cold call, man. But if we're looking at it, even at an event, and having the conversation. So it is that entrepreneurial leader. They are sub a million. They have been the founder from the start. They've been on this journey. They've got this team in. And basically something is wrong. And sometimes they just don't know what that is.
Gotcha. All right. So let's say we meet at an event and I'm a founder. I am that person. Cool. So, hey Joe, I'm Colin. Nice to meet you.
Hey Colin, how you doing?
Good.
So I was hearing about your business when we were talking about it before. You've got to that growth point. What's going on in your business at the moment?
Well, it's just me closing and we've got some sales, but we're trying to really build this up.
Yeah, because often what I see when businesses get to this point is that the founder has managed to lead it to a stage where there's just too many plates that are being spun. In that early stages where it's all exciting and you are in full control of things, there comes this point where you've got that team on board, but now it feels like you're chasing your tail, that things internally are a bit spaghetti junction. It can be hard to know what the tactical and the strategic roadmap are to get up to that next level. Mm-hmm. And usually you hire some really good people, but it's about how to make the best use of those. How clear do you feel that your strategy and your roadmap are at the moment?
I'm not really sure who to hire next. So probably, you know, we know where the product's going, but not where the sales team's going.
Yeah, so it's really important when I'm working with clients to think about where are we trying to take this as an organization. Often there's a lot of vision points that are on a tactical roadmap and a strategic roadmap. It's just thinking about which one makes sense for you to aim at next. You know, what is the next horizon that you should be aiming at? And what I can help you to do is to work out exactly what that is. Because to be honest, Colin, every time I work with entrepreneurs, the answers are in you. I'm not the guy who's going to have your answers. But what I can help you to do is to pull them out of your head, get them into a narrative that makes sense, and then we can start to plug in the gaps that are going to free you up.
That sounds awesome, Joe. If people are curious, they want to meet you, they want to talk to you, they got questions, what's the best way for them to reach out?
So they can reach me on joe@josephtrodden.com. They can also follow me on LinkedIn. There's quite a bit of mindset content there. That is my only social media channel. I don't tweet or Facebook. So yeah, LinkedIn is the place to find me, and the website, josephtrodden.com.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on the show today. And thanks everybody for listening.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Shout out to Predictable Revenues, Service LinkedIn Outbound Service for sponsoring this video. As a founder and sales leader myself, I know most of the best practices in terms of like what I need to be doing on LinkedIn. But sometimes I just don't have the time. You know what the right things to do are, but it just comes down to a trade-off of where's my time better spent? And can I find somebody to click around on LinkedIn for me and book meetings, you know, and then I can focus on higher level activities. And so think about it. What's the best use of your time? If you're a founder, sales leader, and you have a team, you need some meetings, I'd encourage you to check it out. I'm using it myself. I'm obviously the founder, so I'm eating our own dog food. But if you're curious, click the link below to learn more.